Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Wednesday edition of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. It is Wednesday, isn't it, Patrick? Last time I checked, I've been so messed up by the days of the week with Labor Day being on Monday. You can confirm we are on Wednesday.
Indeed, but what even is time anymore over the last 6 months?
That is a very solid point there, Patrick Lilia, who is on the other side of the production glass. Also have Sasha, a new producer at the station, who will be joining us in the future as he's sitting in and training today. So looking forward to having him be a part of the show in the near future. Lots to get to today. I normally focus on local politics, but later in the show, I got to go to a couple of national stories that I want to talk about, including the Secretary of State in Georgia alleging that more than 1,000 people voted twice. Is that actually true? We'll talk about that. Also ahead, why Florida, of all states, could be to the rescue for us on election night in terms of letting us know who will eventually win the 2020 presidential election. So we'll talk about that and some local news in the second half of the show. But first, very happy to welcome back our usual Wednesday guest. It is Patrick Kulikin. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Website is MinnesotaReformer.com, as they do a great job with in-depth reporting on the local political scene in Minnesota. Hey, Patrick, how are you doing today?
Good to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, good to have you back. So a couple of stories I want to talk to you about today. And, well, I want to start off with just the wackiness we're getting out of the office of Jim Hagedorn, who is the Republican representative from the 1st District in Minnesota, including a large portion of southern Minnesota. As it sounds like, Patrick, that, well, he hired his own lawyer to conduct an internal review of what happened with all of this mail that he was sending out at taxpayer expense. And at least his lawyer said that, well, Hagedorn was hoodwinked. Although that might not be the case, as it sounds like the former chief of staff, Peter Sue, who has been accused of leading this charge of funneling money that his staff was spending on printing, well, he's contending otherwise as he's fired back in the Star Tribune. So this whole incident started when you guys were reporting on Hagedorn spending a whole bunch of money on mailers, more than any other member of Congress in the Minnesota Reformer. So talk about the latest developments, this report from Hagedorn's lawyer, and then sounding like we're getting some counterclaims from Peter Sue.
Yeah, so go back about a year, and in the past year, Representative Jim Hagedorn has spent a solid nearly $500,000 sending mail at taxpayer expense to his constituents. And two of the contracts were particularly questionable because one went to a member of his own staff, a guy by the name of John Sample. That is our ethics experts that we talked to said that is improper. And another $340,000 printing contract went to a company called Abernathy West. And we didn't know who the owner of that company was. They wouldn't give us any information about it. We've come to learn in this internal review that Hagedorn has conducted, or his lawyer has conducted, Abernathy West is owned by the former chief of staff's brother. So quite a classic grift, it looks like. So this week on Labor Day, Hagedorn's attorney sent out this the summary of an internal review. I mean, I for one, I'm pretty sure that if you're feeling really innocent, you don't send out the contents of an internal review on Labor Day. But that's just an aside. And in the in this review, it essentially finds, surprise, surprise, that Hagedorn was blameless. And as soon as he learned about these questionable dealings, he was very quick to act decisively. He fired Peter Sue and suspended John Sample, and there was also some overbilling. So it's quite a story. And then yesterday, the Star Tribune gets a hold of recorded audio between Peter Sue, the fired chief of staff, whose brother did well in this printing contract, an audio conversation between Sue and Hagedorn, in which Hagedorn, after Hagedorn has supposedly fired Sue, tells him that he didn't really think that any of this was unethical. And this was in August they had this conversation. Hagedorn was foolish enough to make this statement in a phone call with Sue, who obviously recorded it. And it seems to me that they were having this conversation because they were gaming out what to say, because, as you know, the Reformer, our publication, was asking questions about this spending. So quite a story. I think Hagedorn probably thought that he was putting it all to rest with this internal review, but it was only hours later, or at least a day later, that Peter Sue came out with this audio recording. It just makes it seem all the more, I don't know what the word is. I mean, it's sort of soap opera-ish, and sordid to have your former chief of staff recording phone calls with you. So I would say, I don't know if this is penetrating into the First District, the minds of First District voters, but it's certainly... the story just seems to have at least a little bit more legs.
So I want to talk about the timeline on this. And by the way, as a side note, it sounds like Jim Hagedorn did get his money's worth with the lawyer that he hired. But I want to back up and talk about the timeline of these audio recordings. So when Peter Sue, again, the former chief of staff of Jim Hagedorn, I think I might have said he was the campaign chief. He was the chief of staff for Jim Hagedorn. So he recorded these audio conversations with Hagedorn. I'm assuming he made these recordings after you guys were reporting on what was happening in the Minnesota Reformer, correct?
Well,
or is that not clear?
They had received our inquiries, mm-hmm. so they knew that we were sniffing around.
Gotcha.
I believe it was before the first story actually ran, however.
Wow, because, yeah, that's definitely a sign that they knew something was wrong. Yeah, if all of a sudden you have the chief of staff at the time already reporting conversations even before the media was reporting on what's happening with these mailings. Yeah, that's definitely some red flags that are being waved right there. And certainly from Peter Sue's
perspective. And also, what's odd is that we're told the story that they've put out is that Hagedorn was so upset with the spending that he fired Peter Sue. Well, why on earth is he caught talking to him weeks after he's fired him? I've never fired an employee, God willing, but that's just not something that happens ordinarily, I don't think.
No, and I think if you were to talk to any HR person, that would be highly unusual. And just the timing of this is just so weird that even before you guys released your report on what's happening with this taxpayer-funded mailing that he's sending out, you already have Peter Sue recording the conversations, which leads me to believe that he knows he's probably going to be the fall guy in the situation. And I imagine Peter Sue is probably a guy who wants another job in politics. So if he ends up taking the fall, well, no one's going to hire him again. So, yeah, don't blame him for firing back, so to speak, no pun intended there, and recording these conversations right. So he can say, well, I wasn't doing anything wrong. Hagedorn knew what was happening as well.
Exactly. Yeah, so he clearly decided he was going to defend himself and potentially in the public sphere, so that's why he's making these recordings. But again, I don't know about you, but I don't live in a world where employees and I are recording conversations with each other. At least I hope.
Especially if both parties don't know that the conversation is being recorded, because I imagine Hagedorn had no idea this was being recorded. Yeah, that's generally not a good situation if you have a boss communicating with the employee and the employee is recording audio tapes. Yeah, those are some major, major red flags. So far, how has the Dan Feehan campaign been responding to these allegations? He, of course, is the opponent, the Democratic opponent of Jim Hagedorn, who came very close to winning back in 2018. It's a rematch in 2020 of their 2018 race. Talk about how Feehan's been trying to take advantage of the situation.
They've kind of played it in two ways. One is when your opponent is kind of falling on his face, you just get out of the way. They've not been sort of all over it because there's no need to be. But Feehan has been fairly aggressive, at least I've seen on social media, where he has pointed out Hagedorn's, his, not just this, but his general background. I'm not sure exactly what they're doing on TV down in that market. Mm-hmm. But I have to guess that this is going to be well known to the voters in the first district, which is in southern Minnesota.
Patrick Coulican of the Minnesota Reformer, he's their editor-in-chief, joins us now on the show. I want to talk about one or two more topics with you here, Patrick. And one is something that you guys reported on today, and that has to do with the FEC report that was filed by the Kanye West campaign. This is another wild story, and I'm just fascinated by the fact that we have so many Republicans in the state that seem to be propping up the campaign of Kanye West. And, well, you guys did some reporting looking at his FEC report, and it turns out he spent $25,000 for legal fees to a firm owned by Mormon, Cardall, and Erickson, which is key right here as we look at these three names, because it sounds like, Patrick, well, one of these names is a pretty well-connected Republican operative.
Yeah, Eric Cardall is a former Republican Party officer, and he's frequently in the media because he represents some high-profile libertarian causes. I think a lot of people think of him with actually pretty positive vibes because he seems like kind of a principled guy, and he always gives a good quote. In this case, his firm has apparently done $25,000 worth of legal work for Kanye West, and this follows a pattern where it seems like there's a myriad connections between Republican operatives and the Kanye West campaign. And the motivation here is not that complicated. They want him on the ballot so that he can siphon votes that might otherwise go to Joe Biden from younger and perhaps black voters and people who just are hip hop aficionados that are going to see Kanye West on the ballot. They're going to vote for him, whereas they might have otherwise voted for Joe Biden. And given the fairly narrow margin that Donald Trump lost by in 2016 here in Minnesota, they think that every little bit could help here. So that's clearly what's going on. I think it's sad and a little outrageous if you consider Kanye's kind of public meltdown. And then to be helping his presidential campaign is incredibly exploitive of someone whose own wife has talked about his struggles with mental illness. So that's what's happening. It's outrageous, but I guess all is fair in love and war.
What I find kind of crazy about the situation, too, is that while Republicans aren't outright saying we're putting Kanye on the ballot to siphon votes away from Joe Biden, they're not exactly hiding their connections that they have to Kanye West very well. I mean, as you guys reported, this is an FEC report that anyone can access. And you were also talking about how I think Dina Winter a couple of weeks ago was running into some canvassers that were trying to gather signatures to get Kanye on the ballot under, less than transparent methods. So it's kind of wild to think about, too, how they're not even really trying to even hide the Republicans, their connections to this presidential campaign of Kanye West.
Right. If you remember 2004, there was a bit of a bit of sleuthing that went on amongst investigative reporters to tie the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth to Republican operatives and Republican money. And it took a couple weeks of reporting to do that. In this case, I'm not exactly Woodward and Bernstein here, or at least I wasn't in this case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, they're being very open about it, as you said, which, mm-hmm. which goes to show you how I think the Republican Party has changed and the country has changed.
Well, that's such a great point you bring up back in 2004, yeah, because they went to great lengths, the Republicans did, to try to cover up the connections they had to that Swift boat group that ran ads against John Kerry. And here, I mean, like I said, they're not directly saying we're propping up his campaign, but they're not exactly going to great lengths to hide their connections either. So, yeah, you are correct that the party has certainly changed since 2004 and, well, even going back just a decade ago, let's say. It's a much, much different party since Donald Trump has taken over.
Mm-hmm.
And,
absolutely.
And one more thing I want to highlight with you here, Patrick, and this is something you put in your newsletter today. It's an op-ed that a couple of operatives, one Democrat and one Republican, wrote talking about substance abuse in Minnesota and the need for the state legislature to focus on the recovery process when it comes to addiction, not just on the treatment aspect, which I think is super important because, yeah, we can put a lot of effort on treatment, and I think that's certainly good to do, but recovery is also very, very important when it comes to trying to get through substance abuse. So, yeah, I did like that op-ed that you guys printed today with a DFL and a Republican operative coming together and saying that, hey, we need to put more resources towards recovery in Minnesota.
Yeah, these are two very talented, I would say, two of the best operatives of their generation. You know, fairly younger guys, but they have this bond. They're both on the board of the Minnesota Recovery Connection. They're both in recovery themselves. And I was really thankful that they could come together in a bipartisan way and share this, the key insight that you know, 30 days of treatment is important and good to do, but we really need to help people who are at, you know, 2, 3, 4, 6, 12 months out, because that's when that's when it gets harder, honestly. And we need to give those people resources so they can stay in recovery and not relapse. And if we make those sound investments in stuff like stable housing and good jobs and ongoing programming, it can be cost-effective in the long run.
And you can check out the piece they wrote over at MinnesotaReformer.com as they make some policy recommendations that the state legislature can make as well. We've been speaking to Patrick Koulikan. He is the editor-in-chief for the Minnesota Reformer. One more time, the website, MinnesotaReformer.com, a great resource to find out what's happening in Minnesota politics. Patrick, as always, enjoy the Wednesday visits, and hopefully we'll be chatting next week.
Great to see you. Bye.
And we'll take a break and come on back with more here on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson as you're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Even though these are challenging times, All Energy Solar is still committed to providing you a cost-effective, environmentally friendly energy system through their zero-contact protocol. Solar remains a great value and long-term investment, but some of the incentive programs will be expiring soon. All Energy Solar can walk you through the entire process. They can evaluate your property by phone or webinar, and can even complete preliminary design work without visiting your home. So start saving on your energy bill today and visit allenergysolar.com.
The local advertisers you hear on AM 950 are the lifeblood of the station. If you find yourself regularly tuning in, or if you appreciate the diversity of content we deliver, please take the time to support our advertisers. Even if it's just to thank them for backing AM 950, your voice and support can go a long way. Help keep the station going strong while investing in our local community. Find the complete list of on-air supporters by visiting the advertisers page at am950radio.com. That's am950radio.com.
If you like country music and star-studded award shows, then you'll love 5-Hour Energy CMA Awards Sweepstakes. 5-Hour Energy wants to send you and a guest to Music City to bask in the glow of music's brightest stars at the 2020 CMA Awards. To enter, buy any 5-Hour Energy product, snap a picture of the receipt and upload it. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, go to 5hecountry.com. Sweepstakes end October 10, 2020. Must be U.S. resident 18 years or older. Void where prohibited. Sponsored by Living Essentials, LLC.
Hi, I'm Matt McNeil, and I want to encourage you to join me weekday afternoons at 3 p.m. for the Matt McNeil Show. It's a Twin Cities-based full hour of talk where we discuss what's going on in the state and in the nation from a Minnesota perspective. We'll be joined by a lot of great guests, and we'll take your phone calls. Interact with us on the Twitter page, at Matt McNeil Show, the Facebook page, Progressive Citizen X, the Matt McNeil Show, and on email, comment at am950radio.com. The Matt McNeil Show, weekday afternoons at 3, right here on AM 950.
The Electric Fetus is now open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. There are limits to the number of people allowed in the store, and masks are required. Web and phone orders are available for curbside pickup. The Electric Fetus is buying used vinyl and DVDs and some CDs. Stop in or email info at electricfetus.com. Visit electricfetus.com for all the latest info and to shop for music, gift department merchandise, and gift cards. 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis.
Crooners Supper Club is leading the Twin Cities back to live performances this summer with two new distance-safe outdoor dinner show options. The popular Lakeside Drive-In concerts will continue with new shows added throughout the summer. And not to be outdone, Crooners is also introducing a new Lakeside Cafe in its outdoor patio space designed to offer a more intimate, distance-safe outdoor dinner show experience. So head to Crooners Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65 this summer for some delicious food and great music. Make your reservations now at croonersmn.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. So going back to what I was talking about with Patrick Coulican of the Minnesota Reformer in regards to Jim Hagedorn, the crime that he's committed is not necessarily in the fact that he was using taxpayer money to send out campaign mailers. The crime is the fact that he's trying to cover it up. I mean, look at the grand scheme of things and compare the Jim Hagedorn scandal to what we're seeing out of the Trump administration. It's not a sex scandal. It's not a treasonous scandal of using a foreign government to help you in an election. No, it's just using taxpayer money to send out campaign mailers when, really, as you're sitting there as a congressman, you're only supposed to be using that taxpayer money to send out mailers with what's going on in your district, supposed to be nonpartisan, and he wasn't doing it. It's certainly a scandal, but it's not like the scandal of the century. It's not a sex scandal. It's not Watergate. It's not foreign governments interfering in elections. It's, by the most part, a very minor scandal, but they've only completely blown this thing up by having Hagedorn hire his own lawyer to clear his name, then having his now former chief of staff recording audio tapes of conversations with Jim Hagedorn. That's where the real crime is right there. If I'm sitting there as Jim Hagedorn, and I know this story is coming through the media talking about how you were using taxpayer money to send out mailers, it's not a good look. But if we were to go out and say, hey, you know what? I'm a first-term congressman. I made a mistake. I had a misunderstanding about what taxpayer money can be used for in terms of campaign mailers. I've learned my lesson. I won't be doing it again. We've conducted an internal review to make sure it won't happen again. Yeah, the story would have some legs for a couple of days, but it would largely fade away, and everyone would forget about it by Labor Day. Instead, you have Hagedorn's office trying to cover up this entire thing, and that's why this story does have legs in the 1st Congressional District. I've never gotten that with politicians. People are very forgiving when it comes to electoral politics. If you have a politician that admits that they were wrong, apologizes for their actions, and says they won't do it again, people, for the most part, largely forgive those politicians. But so often, you have elected officials that are scared of having a couple of bad days in the news cycle, and they end up just exacerbating the situation by trying to cover up what they were doing in the first place. And I think that's exactly what's happening with Jim Hagedorn, and that story's not going away. Again, the cover-up is the bigger crime than just doing something minor like using taxpayer money to send out mailers. Like I said, that story would have gone away in a couple of days if Hagedorn had handled that a lot better. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We do have open phone lines for the rest of the hour. One more local story I want to talk about before we head to break and switch gears and talk about some national news. So the census is still taking place in Minnesota, even though the federal government tried to shut down the census operations. It was overturned by a judge the other day. So in Minnesota, we have the census still happening. And in fact, I actually had someone knock on my door a few weeks ago since I was procrastinating on filling out my census form. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is that Minnesota is not doing that great with our census response. And it's not just affecting urban cities, which is often what happens when you have people who are failing to respond to the census. So Minnesota News Connection, who I occasionally use on the show, just reported today that they were talking to the city administrator of Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. This person is named Kelsey Clem, and she said census participation levels in her community and in surrounding areas around Detroit Lake, so that's a big portion of northwestern Minnesota, they're having a very, very low response rate, which I find really interesting because in theory, the Trump administration wanted to stop the census from happening in hopes that they would have people who typically come from minority communities not be counted, which would give Republicans an advantage when it comes to redistricting. But according to what's being reported at Minnesota News Connection, this is also affecting rural areas, as we're just talking about with Detroit Lakes. So this whole strategy of ending the census early so you have fewer black and brown people counted, which is exactly what the Trump administration is aiming to do, it could end up backfiring, being that it looks like there are several rural communities that are also having very low response rates with the census, which means perhaps you could have urban and suburban areas actually be overcounted in terms of comparing that to more rural areas. So found that is a really interesting take with how the census is working right now. By the way, in Minnesota, the national average response rate so far is 65%. We're doing a little bit better than that national response rate. We're at 75%, but still nowhere near where we were back in 2010 when we were leading the nation with our census response rate. So feel free to check that out over at Minnesota News Connection. All right, we're going to take a break in just a couple of seconds here and talk about these allegations that are being made by the Secretary of State of Georgia, who claims that he found 1,000 people that attempted to vote twice in their state primary back in August. Is this accurate? It's important because it's ammo that the Trump campaign could use if they end up losing in November's election. They could end up saying, well, look at all these people who tried to vote twice in Georgia. There's voter fraud everywhere. But we're going to take a deeper look at these allegations that the Secretary of State of Georgia is making about people voting twice as to whether that's accurate or not. So stick around. We'll be back to talk about that and more here on FYI Politics. Also have your calls ahead, too.
Hazel's Northeast is back and offering some of the most creatively prepared comfort food you'll find. Delicious breakfast options include the slow-cooked brisket hash, chicken fried steak, and the famed drunken banana French toast. Or for lunch and dinner, there's Swedish meatballs, wild rice gumbo, and more. Hazel's Northeast is open Wednesdays through Saturdays, 8 to 8, and Sundays, 9 to 2. Hazel's Northeast delivers real good food. Family-owned at 29th and Johnson in Minneapolis. Make your reservation now at hazelsne2go.com.
Minuteman Press Uptown is still open and printing everything. But they are taking some extra precautions. You can order by phone or online and do curbside pickup. Plus, they're offering 25% off all postcards right now for AM950 listeners in need. That's Minuteman Press Uptown.
To say your home has been lived in these last few months is probably an understatement. Have you assessed the damage? Call the expert cleaners at Zero Res. Just mention AM950 when you call and take $50 off your duct cleaning. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMinnesota.com.
It's me, your heart. High blood pressure is serious, and if you think I'm just going to keep ticking away, you're wrong. I can quit whenever I want, but I like my job. Just treat me better. Maybe we can do some exercise on occasion? After all, we're in this together.
Don't let your heart quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get yours to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Hazel's Northeast is back and offering some of the most creatively prepared comfort food you'll find. Delicious breakfast options include the slow-cooked brisket hash, chicken fried steak, and the famed drunken banana French toast. Or for lunch and dinner, there's Swedish meatballs, wild rice gumbo, and more. Hazel's Northeast is open Wednesdays through Saturdays, 8 to 8, and Sundays, 9 to 2. Hazel's Northeast delivers real good food. Family-owned at 29th and Johnson in Minneapolis. Make your reservation now at hazelsne2go.com.
Make a difference in another person's life by donating your car with Auto Technical. Auto Technical helps families in need of transportation with reconditioned vehicles. Your gift will make a difference. Here's Richard, the owner of Auto Technical, talking about how he got started helping families in need with transportation.
Hey, my wife told me when we first started, she says, "You're going to find this so rewarding." And I really didn't know what she meant. But when people come in and... Oh, man, give me a second.
Take your time.
They come in, the kids will be jumping around. They're so happy. Imagine getting on the bus with three kids, 7 o'clock in the morning, take them to some daycare, and then getting on the bus and going back to work. People sometimes break down in tears and can't stop. And I think we all can relate to the time we didn't have a car.
Donate your car today and learn more at autotechnical.org.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for cloudy skies today with a high near 51. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 37. Thursday, sunny with a high near 61. And Friday, rain with a high around 65.
Don't miss the Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday at the Hossie Arena in Lakeville. It's the smart place to start your home improvement projects. The Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday at the Hossie Arena in Lakeville. Visit expoguys.com to learn more. That's expoguys.com. We'll see you at the show.
FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Welcome back to the show. We'll be talking about these voter fraud allegations in Georgia in just a second, but first, got to talk to my buddy Gary in Minneapolis, who's been waiting on the phone lines for a while. Gary, what is on your mind today?
Well, I'll start out with Jay Gould, one of the most infamous robber barons. I believe it was back in 1800 sometime. He made the statement, I can pay half the American people to kill the other half. And it reminds me of some of these divisions of that bio hatred is dish out on Fox News. They're so angry. And
are you talking Scott Baio?
They con these people.
Yeah.
And then I have some other stuff when you're ready.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
Oh, yeah. Well, Republicans, even back in 47, they passed Taft-Hartley, taking the chief out of much of labor. And so they never did like working people. And unions built the middle class with the blessings of Roosevelt in the beginning. We didn't have any legal unions till Roosevelt. And so now what's happening is we're back to the era of they broke down the middle class. We're back to the era of Depression Hoover. You know, and they didn't like government then for us. They don't like it for us now. That's why they give those big tax cuts that trickle to us and they give it to the rich. And so I'm afraid we're headed towards the Depression if this stuff don't stop. And, you know, when the Democrats release tax them about 40% on the income tax, that's where you get the rich, that, and inheritance tax, and the capital gains tax. But and he wants to raise that, too. But that ain't nothing like when it was at a rate of 70, 90%. Even then, they had their loopholes paid 50%. So I could go on and on about this garbage. They stand on the corners wherever I go in Minneapolis, they're begging. You know, with signs. Mm-hmm. And then they got the tents popping up again on Franklin Avenue down here in Hiawatha. This reminds me of the Hoovervilles, the Trumpvilles now.
That's exactly what they should be called. And thanks for the phone call, Gary, as always. You're even seeing some homeless people in the suburbs who are asking for money on street corners. So, yeah, it is very, very depressing that we are getting to that situation. It's not just confined to the cities. You are most certainly seeing that in the suburbs as well. The craziest thing was when I actually saw someone begging for money near Highway 12 in Wayzata, of all places. Yeah, you know we're not in good economic conditions when you're even having that occur in a city like Wayzata. But glad Gary called in to talk about economics. There's one topic that I would have a big big dispute with the Joe Biden campaign. It's that they're not focusing enough on that economic message. It is the one area, when you look at polling, that Donald Trump still holds an advantage over Joe Biden on. It's the economy. And unfortunately, I don't think the Biden economy or the Biden campaign is doing enough to hit Trump on the economy. Because if Joe Biden takes the economy argument away from Donald Trump, he literally has nothing to run on this fall. So appreciate the phone call there, Gary. And the last point he brought up, how we could be due for a collapse. I would be very nervous about late September into October. That is traditionally when we have big market crashes. That's what happened when you're talking about the 1987 crash, the 2008 crash, or the 1929 Great Depression crash. Those all happened in the fall, right around late September into October. And I'd be nervous. I won't predict that anything's going to happen, but I'd be nervous about something possibly happening come a little bit later on this fall when you look at how inflated the stock market is right now. So good issues there highlighted by Gary. So I want to switch gears now and talk about some allegations that the Georgia Secretary of State is making, with having him saying that they have 1,000 cases of people voting twice in their primary election back in August. So Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger said that Georgia had seen its percentage of votes cast by mail skyrocket from around 5% historically to near 50% this year during the primary, and that number will probably be even higher for the general election. So Raffensperger told reporters that the state had 150,000 voters who applied for an absentee vote in this summer's elections who arrived at polling places on election day to have their votes canceled. So in other words, what he's saying is that he had 150,000 people who applied for an absentee ballot, but these voters changed their mind and decided, you know what, I'm going to vote in person instead. That is perfectly legal to do. If you receive an absentee ballot but never cast it, you can go in and say, I'm going to go vote in person instead. But he claimed that of that 150,000 total, 1,000 people actually double voted, knowing full well that they had filled out an absentee ballot, had mailed it back in, and then showed up on the day of the election. So what he's alleging is that, 1,000 people voted by mail and then decided to show up in person at the polls and vote again. But that's not the entire story of what happened, and as to reasons why people may have been accused of voting twice, I'll leave that to a guy named Michael McDonald. He is a University of Florida political science professor who lays out in a Twitter thread why people might have the appearance that they voted twice. So what he says in a series of tweets is that Raffensperger's announcement should be treated with caution, pointing to data describing the reasons given for voters who were issued a mail ballot that they had canceled to vote in person. And some of the reasons why is that, when you end up showing up in person to vote and you want to cancel your mail-in ballot, typically whoever the election judge is has to write down the reason why that's happening. And this is public record, as McDonald points out. A lot of times when these election judges were writing down reasons, they were riddled with typos, which could be a reason why, someone's being accused of voting twice even though they didn't. It could just very well be a typo on the election judge's end. But then he also points out this as well with how elections work. Think about it this way. Let's say you're an election judge or an election official and you receive two ballots from a voter, one mail-in vote and one in-person vote. You don't just sit there and scratch your head confused and think, what do I do with these? I guess we just go ahead and count both of the votes. No, that's not what you do. You only count one of the votes, which would be the in-person vote. You would cancel the mail ballot. He also points out another scenario, does McDonald. If a mail ballot has arrived, the in-person voter votes a provisional ballot that will be accepted if a mail ballot has not yet arrived. and the in-person voter casts an in-person vote, and the mail ballot is canceled once it arrives. So trying to put that in other words, let's say you show up at your polling location, you've already voted by mail, but you want to change your vote in person. What the election official does, they cancel your mail ballot, and then they'll count whatever vote you cast in person. Or if it's the other way around, where let's say you've asked for a provisional ballot, or you've asked, I should say, for an absentee ballot, you haven't filled it out yet, but you show up at the polling place to vote in person, again, your in-person vote is what counts. So you can check out his Twitter thread. That is Michael McDonald, who lays out some reasons as to why they are alleging 1,000 people voted twice in Georgia, even though this really isn't the case. And it's kind of a problem I have with some of the national publications who are saying, well, we have 1,000 people who voted twice in Georgia, when really, when you dig deeper, that's not entirely the case. It's kind of lazy journalism when you just write the headline and don't report on what actually happened. Because as McDonald points out, there are several reasons why people could be accused of voting twice, even though they actually didn't vote twice. Another final thing to point out, this isn't the first time the Secretary of State of Georgia has made allegations of people voting twice or made allegations of voter fraud. Yeah, they've done this in the past. But guess how many times they've actually prosecuted a voter for voter fraud? Zero times. And that's another key point right there. He can say that he has 1,000 people that voted twice, but if he's not actually going to prosecute them, then he probably doesn't have any evidence that they were intentionally trying to vote twice. So watch out for that, because I'm assuming we're probably going to hear this type of argument made from the Trump campaign on election night if the results show that he does not win. He'll probably go back and point to Georgia and say, well, look, we had 1,000 examples of people voting twice, even though it's much more complicated than that. And oftentimes, well, people weren't really voting twice. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's go to Randy in St. Cloud. Hey there, Randy.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, here.
The thing in Georgia, I think the real problem there is they found people who voted. This guy's name is James Brown. This guy's name is James Brown. And so they voted three times, and then Joe Smith voted a bunch.
Yeah, I didn't even get to that aspect. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, you're talking about where if you have two people with the same name. By the way, funny story about my name. So I'm Brett Johnson. It's not an on-air name. That's my actual name. And going back to my high school years, I went to high school with another guy named Brett Johnson who had the exact same birthday as me, but just from 1 year before, and they mixed that up all the time. And I imagine if we had a voter cross-check type system, which I think you're referring to, Randy, I would probably be kicked off the rolls too, since they would say, we got two Brett Johnsons. Yeah,
both of you'd be kicked off.
Mm-hmm.
And one quick comment, if I might, about the economy and Biden not running on the economy. He's doing exactly... They're trying to get the suburban Republicans, the moderate Republicans, mm-hmm. to go with them. And so the economy isn't an issue to them like it is to most of the working stiffs like me. Mm-hmm. The economy means something. And so to them, it's not a big deal. So they're not pushing that because they're just trying, because it's going to work just like it did before. Because remember how it worked so good? wait a minute. Wait. Oh, no. It didn't work. Wait, why are we doing it again? Anyway, that's my comment.
All right. Thanks for the phone call there, Randy. Appreciate it as always. Yeah, Randy, referring to the fact that, you do have the Biden campaign largely appealing to suburban voters and to, at least in their thinking, they don't want to alienate those suburban voters. So they're not talking much about the economy or the Green New Deal or universal health care or so on and so on. It's part of a very direct strategy that they're using not to necessarily highlight the economy very much. Now, traditionally for Democratic presidential candidates, avoiding talking about the economy is usually a bad strategy that doesn't work. This year could be the exception, though, where Donald Trump is so unpopular that Joe Biden still might end up winning, despite the fact that he's not highlighting the economy at all. it could be an exception to the rule simply because he's running into the right politician at the right time. So it would be interesting to see if Democrats continue with this campaign strategy rather than recognize that, well, maybe they just ran against the right candidate at the right time, or I guess, depending on your perspective, the wrong candidate at the wrong time. I still always contend that Donald Trump is an overrated politician. Going back to 2016, I mean, people often think that he's this magical campaigner. He's a brilliant strategist, and that's how he won in 2016. I don't think that was the case whatsoever. I think in 2016, going back to what I was saying a second ago, Donald Trump happened to be running against the right candidate at the right time, or like I said, depending on your perspective, the wrong candidate at the wrong time. Hillary Clinton in 2016, we just had an alignment of the stars where Hillary Clinton was the wrong candidate in 2016 for the Dems, and I think that's a big reason why Donald Trump won back in 2016, and who knows? We might be having a similar scenario happen in 2020 where Donald Trump is struggling to run as an incumbent and Democrats might end up winning simply because Donald Trump is the right candidate at the right time to defeat. So very interesting presidential electoral strategy we're seeing in the 2016 and 2020 cycles. Two strategies that I think might be more exceptions to the rule when it comes to presidential campaign strategy. But like I said, the Biden strategy might end up working simply because Donald Trump is the perfect candidate for Joe Biden to be running against in 2020. All right, let's take a break. Come on back with a few more miscellaneous stories on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Hi, this is Laura. 2020 has been marked by a virus, growing evidence of the climate crisis, a political uprising, and many of us are feeling unsettled. Together, we get by with a little help from our friends. Together, we find the resilience to meet the moment. Regenerative economics holds great promise for improved systems. Instead of a dog-eat-dog world, let's create a trust economy, one that honors the earth and sees the limitless value of each individual. When we buy from each other, we know each other. Go to am950radio.com and see the wonderful independent businesses AM950 relies on to exist. These businesses are more than advertisers. They are our friends. We all get by with a little help from our friends. Help us build the AM950 business ecosystem. If you know of a company, service, or product that belongs in the AM950 community, let me know. Laura at am950radio.com, or you may also call the station 952-946-8885. AM950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hey, I guess we found a new name for our show.
Really? What's the new name?
Pilots Progressive Party.
How did you ever come up with that?
Pilots our name and progressive fun is our game.
Well, what's that about?
It's a one-hour news show with progressive guests and information you normally don't hear on the radio.
Well, that's so exciting. I have a few ideas for guests myself.
I know they'll be progressive.
Wednesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. on AM 950.
The progressive voice of Minnesota.
Land of 10,000 lakes has an ice ring to it, but actually Minnesota has more than 11,800 lakes. But who's counting?
Well, there's Ann Lake, Balsam Lake, Cass Lake, Detroit Lake, Eagle Lake, Fox Lake, Gull Lake, Hidden Lake, Adam Lake, John Lake, Crays Lake, Lean Lake.
But if water isn't your thing, Minnesota is also home to amazing hiking, biking, and more. Find your true north. Visit exploreminnesota.com.
Quarry Lake, Rainy Lake, Silver Lake, Toad Lake, U.S. Lock and Dam Pool 5A, Boss Lake.
Located just north of 50th and France, the Great Wall Restaurant has provided a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 1981. Specializing in Sichuan and Peking dishes, they offer one of the most extensive menus in the Twin Cities. Favorites include hot and sour soup, pan-fried dumplings, and mushu pork with homemade Chinese pancakes. Stop by their Edina location or call for takeout at 952-927-4439. See the full menu at greatwallrestaurant.us.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around, check us out online, and when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
Back on the final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. So I want to talk some Maine politics for just a second. As you might know, Susan Collins, the perceived as moderate Republican, is running for re-election against her Democratic opponent, Sarah Gideon. Well, today, Joe Lieberman, the one-time vice presidential nominee for the Democrats back in 2000, Lieberman has endorsed Susan Collins. I'll let you stew on that one right there. Joe Lieberman back in the news. Also, some better news out of Maine, though, is that the state's Supreme Judicial Court has overruled a lower court's ruling, which means ranked choice voting, as of now, is going to be used in that state in 2020. And that could be significant not only for the Senate race, which could help Democrats, but also in Maine's second congressional district. Because if you're not familiar, Maine actually votes for president in a little bit of a different way, where they actually cast their electoral votes by congressional districts. And in theory, by using ranked choice voting, yeah, you could have someone vote for a third party candidate as their first choice, but then put Joe Biden as their second. So that could have a pretty major impact in that state. Locally in Minnesota, I got to bring this up because she's back in the news. I kind of miss her as a politician. That would be Michelle Bachmann, as she was recently on the online television show called Victory Update, and she made some interesting comments. She says that Antifa and Black Lives Matter are trying to overthrow the U.S. government and hoping to use Joe Biden to collapse the economy and impose a one-world communist regime in the U.S. Ah, good old Michelle Bachmann. I sort of miss her at times, but at others, when I'm thinking more sanely about it, yeah, probably good that she's out of Congress. We got time for one more phone call before we wrap up the show today. Mark, I got about a little over a minute for you. What are you thinking about?
Okay, first I'm going to put on my political consultant hat because Joe Biden just once again shot himself in the foot. And what he did was he nominated a former Barack Obama immigration chief, Cecilia Munoz, to head up his immigration policy, which has infuriated the Latino base. In fact, a guy named Pablo Manriquez said if Biden wins, no one from the Obama administration should be allowed to touch the immigration policy portfolio. So the other thing is that, you know, why Joe Biden doesn't talk about the economy is because that under Obama and Biden, 1% of the economic gains, 95% of the economic gains went to the top 1%. So you don't have any way to push back on that. And, you know, once again, if Biden gets elected, we are going to have to push back what he's going to try to, if he's going to bring back Eric Holder and Larry Summers and Tim Geithner and Susan Rice and everybody else, you know, that's not going to fly.
All right, Mark, we're going to have to leave it there since we are just about out of time. And I'll have to look more into what you were talking about with this new immigration person that's been now added to the Biden campaign. One more note about this. This was just a study put out by Brown University today, very sobering. They say at least 37 million people have been displaced in the wars America has launched since 9/11. 37 million people displaced because of American wars. All right, we got Matt McNeil up next, and don't miss Pilot's Progressive Party tonight. Two big guests, as he's going to be talking to Jen McEwen, who just won a DFL primary in Duluth, and also Hennepin County Sheriff Dave Hutch. That's ahead, Pilot's Progressive Party.